Hello, my name is William Clemens. You are listening to WJRH 104.9 Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. I once again am Will Clemens, and this is the first ever episode of Hot Take Sports. So please take it easy on me, guys. First time ever on the air. Pretty excited to be here. I'm really thankful for Lafayette for giving me the opportunity to get on the air. So as I said, this is Hot Take Sports. Sports Talk Radio. Today is October 25th, 2021. We just had a huge weekend of college football and NFL stuff that we'd like to get into. But first, I'm going to introduce myself. So as I said, my name is Will Clemens. I'm from Connecticut, outside of New York. I got to get into my biases as Sports Talk Radio host. Huge Jets fan. So life is pretty tough. Not too much fun. Huge Jets fan. This was a rough weekend, as it is most of the time. Sundays are not fun. I'm also a Yankee fan, so these past couple weeks have not been fun at all. I'm a Knicks fan, which gives me a little bit of hope. They are young and fun, and it's been a little bit of fun. It's three games in. And a UConn basketball fan. My dad went there, grew up in Connecticut, so huge UConn ball fan. They're good. I'm hoping for a big season out of them this year. We will see what we can get. So, I could probably do this show about the Jets alone. Got a lot I could talk about there. But I do want to get into the Jets because it all is pretty miserable. So, the Jets are now 1-5 on the season after taking a brutal loss, surrendering 54 points to the Patriots. That was so not fun to watch. I actually couldn't watch. I was heading home for my sister's parents' weekend. She's a senior in college as well. So I was listening on the radio, and I honestly had to turn it off after the fourth quarter. I watched all the highlights, but it was miserable. Zach Wilson, starting quarterback, number two overall pick, went down. It's a morale bummer. I'm supposed to go to the game this Sunday when they play the Bengals. I don't even know how badly, because I don't have tickets yet. I don't know how bad I even want to go anymore. Like, I wanted to go to watch Zach Wilson, and I don't even know if I want to support this team anymore. And 2 weeks later, they play the Bills at home. If Wilson's supposed to play, then I think I want to go, but it's going to be tough. Here at Lafayette, I'm really thankful because we're only about an hour away from MetLife. It's actually better to drive to MetLife from where I am here at college than I am at home, because I don't have to go over the tap or any of the bridges, which become a total pain. So I was really excited to go to a ton of Jets games this year, and now that I'm here, I don't even want to support them. So they're now 1-5 on the season. They give you so much hope with like little spur wins, such as against Tennessee. Zach Wilson threw that 60-yard bomb to Corey Davis, who, by the way, is absolutely killing it this season. Corey Davis should be a Pro Bowler, having a great year. I love watching him play. That was a great acquisition by JD. But other than that, it's all pretty awful. I mean, so they came off the bye. They were in London 2 weeks ago, where they just came out flat against the Falcons. Speaking of coming out flat, they pretty much are always coming out flat, considering they have been outscored. I'm going to say this slow so that the radio audience can take a listen. They've been outscored 44-0 in the first quarter of their first six games this year. 44-0. They have 0 points in the first quarter. They have 5 first downs. It's just incredibly frustrating, because as a Jets fan, the big complaint about Gase for like his last 2 years of coaching is he was great on that first drive. He could come in with a game plan and take those boys right down the field, no problem. And I'm not supporting Gase whatsoever. I hated having him as a coach. He ruined many, many Sundays for me. But it's really frustrating. They can't do anything in the first quarter. I mean, they come off a bye week, so they have extra time to prepare. They've already seen the Patriots. Like, it's a rival in division, so I don't know how you can be so perplexed by their defensive schemes. You have all your starters in on offense, with exception for Becton, which, I mean, that doesn't help, but Fant and Morgan Moses have stepped up to the job. I mean, they've been all right, decent. But Becton coming back will be huge. Whatever. And I forget what the stat was, but I think they had like not even 30 yards of offense that first quarter. They were down 14-0 after the first quarter. Game was over. I was frustrated. I was driving in my car, and I've had many Sundays driving back to campus where I'm listening to the Jets on the radio, and it's just heart-wrenching. I mean, year after year, they haven't been good since I was in, I believe it was eighth grade when they had that year with Fitzpatrick and Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. That was a fun year. I mean, they lost to the Bills, of course, to bump them out of the playoffs. But for this year, nothing's better. They are a very bad football team. On defense, they at least the first time they played the Patriots, they put up a game, and they were really forcing Mac Jones to like have to make tough throws and getting a lot of pressure on him. And after they had, I believe it was 7 sacks against Tennessee 3 weeks ago, they had 0 2 weekends ago against the Falcons, and they had 0 again this week. Quinnen and John Franklin Myers just can't get home. It's really frustrating. And so you go to look immediately towards the coaching staff. And so when I first heard of the Robert Saleh hire, just so that you guys know my background, I was pumped. I thought it was a home run hire. I think that JD and Saleh kind of get along in terms of their like mantra and their hard work and work ethic kind of thing. And Saleh, I think, can create an awesome culture. You saw him do it in San Francisco, but man, it is. They were playing hard for him up until about like last week. I don't know what happened. The defense should be better. Like, there's no excuse. He's a defensive guy. He's got a really good front seven. Bryce Hall in the 5th round of the 2020 draft was a steal. He's really good on the boundary. And their rookie corners have been stepping up. So, I mean, May was back this week. It just was a pathetic performance. They got to be better. Like, Saleh's got to show some sort of growth from last year, because Gase is going to be considered one of the worst all-time head coaches ever. He was miserable. He did nothing good for the franchise. He did nothing good for the Dolphins. He ruined Tannehill until he got to the Titans. I mean, Darnold, we'll get into that later, but he wasn't good with Darnold regardless. So I just want to see, like, competency at this point as a Jets fan the next year. So what did we get? We got nothing. It was pretty miserable again. The person I want to start to focus in on, though, is Mike LaFleur, because he is supposed to be like God from the heavens of running the Shanahan system and implementing with alongside Zach Wilson, totally talented quarterback. He's supposed to implement the Shanahan system, which has flourished in San Francisco, and it's totally been so amazing. Well, Aaron Rodgers runs it up north in Green Bay with Mike's brother Matt. The two of them have had back-to-back 13-3 seasons and trips to the conference title games. Like, how could it possibly be such a big disparity between Mike LaFleur, who came from that Shanahan coaching tree, Mike LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan? Well, he's somebody that the Jets should seriously consider moving off of if these offensive woes continue. They've been miserable on offense. They score a mere 13.4 points per game. Sometimes I get frustrated when people say, oh, they come from the XYZ coaching tree. And like, I feel like a few coaches will produce very good assistants. But like in the case of Belichick has sent off many coaches to head coaching jobs, many coordinators to head coaching jobs, such as Matt Patricia in Detroit and Brian Flores in Miami. And it's just, sometimes it's just hard to see success. Just because they learned from an awesome coach doesn't mean that they're going to be successful in the league. So I don't know. Joe Douglas should evaluate Mike LaFleur's position at the end of the season, or even before. I mean, it would be real. I know it wouldn't be great to have a new system for Zach Wilson the second year, but I haven't seen any growth or potential with Mike LaFleur. His play calls have been dull. It's just really frustrating. So I know that we shouldn't focus entirely on the Jets the entire episode, but the last thing I want to talk about is Joe Douglas and his decision to move off Zach Wilson in favor of Sam Darnold. So Zach Wilson has not been good. He's been all right. He's had one game against Tennessee in which he had a lot of success. Other than that, it's been hard to come by. You see, Sam Darnold was with Adam Gase, and many people in the media decided that Sam Darnold was good, Gase wasn't. Well, now he's with Carolina, and yesterday he was actually benched in their game to the Giants where they lost 25-3. He was really bad. He was 16 for 25 for 111 yards and a pick. He started off the season really hot, especially against the Jets, his former team in week one, playing really well. He has a plethora of weapons there in Carolina. Joe Brady was the offensive coordinator who took Joe Burrow and that amazing LSU team alongside Ed Orgeron to the national title game. To the national title, I believe they were 15-0, one of the best college football teams of all time. So now you have a proven coordinator with Sam Darnold and Matt Rhule, who's an awesome head coach out of Baylor. They had a little bit of success last year, and they are very committed to Darnold, but he just hasn't been good. So does that mean that Joe Douglas made the right decision? In my opinion, yes. But that doesn't by any means mean that Zach Wilson with the second overall pick, with the amount of other quarterbacks available, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, was the correct pick in itself. I'm not giving up on Zach Wilson. Just got to give him some time. He's got a lot to grow. Hopefully LaFleur can shape up. He's got some weapons. Becton will be back in a few weeks. Hopefully, he's now injured, Zach Wilson, 2 to 4 weeks out because their offensive line is not good. It's decent, but Greg Van Rotten at guard is pretty horrible. The Elijah Vera Tucker pick is working out. He's developing into a really nice starter. Becton will come back. They'll be all right at the offensive line, though I think with our two picks this year, you have to address the offensive line at least one of those picks. If you don't, it's a fail of a draft. They need to protect him. They didn't do it to Darnold. He was shipped out within 3 years. I don't want to see that happen again. One offensive lineman at least, and attempt to acquire one on the free agent market. So, I wonder if you radio listeners have heard enough about the Jets, considering you guys are mostly Eagles fans here, and you probably don't care at all. So now, I'm going to get out of my biases. Nope, just kidding. I'm going to talk about the Yankees. So I'm a not bigger Yankees fan. I'm the biggest Jets fan, but huge Yankees fan. Making this past couple weeks was definitely difficult. It was very fun to chirp all of my Red Sox buddies about that sweep that they had in Fenway 3 weeks before, a week before the wild card game. Then they barely held on, beating the Rays to make the playoffs. The 2 seed in the wild card. They traveled to Fenway to take on the Red Sox in a single game elimination. And man, that was a depressing night. I really thought they were going to get things done. Gerrit Cole on the mound, and he just pitched a dud. I believe he gave up 3 runs in the first inning. It was incredibly frustrating to watch. I was getting texts in like no other from all my buddies that are Red Sox fans. They were just giving me a hard time. So, the Yankees really have to reevaluate their roster at the end of the season. I think that they have to think about adding some hitters that are more situational. It feels like everybody on the Yankees just swings for the fences. Judge, Giancarlo, all those guys, Gallo. I like their trade deadline acquisitions. They helped them. They got hot after the deadline, and they at least were able to make the playoffs. But they need to be able to win in more than one facet. It feels often that the Yankees get hot, and their whole team just starts hitting well, and they hit a bunch of home runs in singular games. But then other days, if they don't get hot, which becomes almost contagious, their hitting, it feels like they just become stagnant. Frustrating. I think they need to be better situationally hitting wise, and we'll see how the 2022 season goes. Boone just got re-signed. I don't have high hopes, but I always love watching the Yankees. So they're always better than the Jets, at least. So we'll see how that goes. Can't wait to talk more baseball in the coming months, but this is football season. And lastly, I want to get to one more of my biases before we get into the weekend recap. Huge Knicks fan. And the Knicks are going to be fun this year. I mean, I know that they dropped an ugly, ugly loss to the Magic last night. Not loving that. But as I discussed, I am a UConn basketball fan. So the fact that Kemba is back playing in the Garden at home is a ton of fun. Julius Randle has got to be the most likable superstar in the entire NBA. He's got a big smile on his face. He plays his heart out. And he was not very successful his first, 7 years of his career. So seeing him take over a huge market like the Knicks and having such great success is a lot of fun. And as a fan, I'm so excited for the future. I know they're not going to win the championship. They're not good enough to. But they hustle. They hustle their butts off. They play great defense. They have great young talent. They keep on hitting, not hitting on draft picks, but RJ Barrett's a great pick. Quickly, who they got, I believe, from a trade. That was a great acquisition. Derrick Rose back in the Garden is so much fun to watch. He hit that huge clutch shot against the Celtics in double overtime a couple nights ago. That was an amazing game. That was one of the best opening night games I've ever watched. And it's tough to talk basketball like this time of year. Like, this is football season. But I just want everyone to keep their eyes on the Knicks. They're going to be fun. They're not going to be that good, but they're going to work, and they're going to be a great team. And seeing Knicks fans energetic about the team again is awesome. You see the videos online there, like these fans going crazy outside the Garden. It's just the league is better when they're good. They're still not good enough to win anything, but they're good. All right. So after I touched upon all of my biases, so that you guys know me in the weeks going forward, you know what I'm rooting for. I think it's time we get into a recurring segment. I know that this is the first week of the show, first edition of the show, but this will be a recurring segment. This is the weekend rundown, which is so typical of any Sports Talk radio show on a Monday. Recap all the games, give analysis, blah, blah, blah. But let's get into it. So on Thursday Night Football, so we're going back a couple nights, the Browns defeated the Broncos 17-14. In Cleveland, the Broncos are frustrating. They started out 3-0, just like the Panthers did, and they've dropped four straight because they are limited at quarterback. Yes, why did the Broncos, with such a talented roster, decide to not go after a quarterback when they had the ninth overall pick? Justin Fields was there. Mac Jones was there. Justin Fields, I know he hasn't been great this season, but just imagine how much more hope the Broncos fans would have with that quarterback developing in their system. They know how crazy talented it is. You just watch the tape at Ohio State, and you know he's good enough to be an NFL quarterback. So I just don't understand. Patrick Surtain is a great player. He's been playing awesome at Alabama. They have good corners. They have a great roster. Receivers are amazing. Noah Fant at tight end is a star. Multiple running backs. Like, this roster is good, and they're able to win now. But that being said, Teddy Bridgewater is a great quarterback. Good dude. Amazing dude, honestly. He's just too limited. He doesn't turn the ball over, which helps him. But he isn't dynamic enough. Like, simple as that. It's not too hard to figure out. Another narrative being discussed after this game is Baker Mayfield. So Baker Mayfield is on the fourth year of his rookie contract. I believe they have an option for a fifth year next year, but Baker essentially right now is playing for his contract. With that being said, he got injured in week six game. He was going for a tackle, I believe, on an interception, and dislocated his shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder, tore his labrum. He's out for a couple weeks, although he is very insistent that he wants to play. It seems that Baker almost knows that he's playing for his contract, and he has this kind of attitude. I won't call it cocky, but he's very confident in himself and in his abilities. So in his press conference, he seemed very frustrated that the team doctors were holding him back. He was like, it's my non-throwing shoulder. I can play. But in the long run, you saw what Case Keenum did. He wasn't great, but was he that much worse than Baker? He ran an efficient game. I believe he had 199 yards and a touchdown. Didn't turn the ball over. The Browns have such a talented roster. I mean, Chubb was out even. But once Nick Chubb comes back, and I believe they're missing one of their tackles too, that I believe that Case Keenum could win just as easily as Baker Mayfield could with this roster. I mean, the Case Keenum's performance in the upcoming weeks for however long Baker's out is going to be super telling to whether the Browns need to give Baker a huge contract, because if they end up spending like, what, I don't even know what the new quarterback market is, like $45 million a year on Baker, they're going to have to lose some of their great offensive linemen, and that's the strength of this team. You can win a lot of games with a B to B-plus quarterback and that O-line, and Nick Chubb is a star. He's a four-down back. Man, he makes this team super dynamic, and then all you need is a decent starter. Case Keenum can most definitely get the job done. He proved that against the Broncos on Thursday Night Football. So that is a fun narrative. We'll see how that goes for the upcoming weeks and actually upcoming year. See if Baker gets a contract. See if what the Browns are going to do with this whole situation. In my opinion, I wouldn't draft someone, but you got to explore other options. Baker's mostly limited. He has ups and downs in his career. He's been very so-so this year, but we'll see how that goes. So the game that I found most intriguing in the 1 o'clock window yesterday was the Bengals defeating the Ravens 41-17. And so that score is so deceiving because I believe it was a 20-17 game with 3 minutes left in the third quarter before Jamar Chase, who is the rookie of the year. There's no question about it. No debate. Jamar Chase is rookie of the year. Most likely he could miss the next couple weeks and still be the rookie of the year. He is a star. Him and Joe Burrow are awesome together. Fun to watch. He had, I believe, 201 yards, 8 catches, and 182-yard touchdown that totally broke the game open. That's when I said they were up 20-17 with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Burrow hits him on a crossing route. He breaks two tackles and takes it 82 yards to the house. What this game just really simply shows is that the Bengals are for real. Like, you can't. They have a 5-2 record. They're now atop the AFC North and atop the AFC in total. I mean, given by like strange tie breaks with the Titans and I forget who else, but it's just funny to see because so many people were writing the Bengals off before the beginning of the season. They came out firing. Joe Burrow had three touchdowns, 416 yards, one pick. They keep on winning games that they aren't really supposed to. They beat the Steelers on the road. This one against the Ravens on the road. You have to put the respect on the Bengals at this point. They are a good team. TJ Uzama, their tight end, is playing incredibly well. O-line is figuring things out. Jonah Williams is really good tackle. Defense is even playing well. I mean, defense held Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense, who had been lighting up everybody, to 17 points. There's something going on there. They're 2-0 in the AFC North, which is huge. Not to mention, both of those wins have come on the road. So that's going to be huge in terms of tie-breaking, because AFC North is a really good division. They're already winning the tie-break versus Baltimore after that win, and we'll see where Pittsburgh and Cleveland go from there. The next game, a huge 1 o'clock window game that everyone, I'm pretty sure, was expecting to be a much better game, was the Chiefs-Titans game in Nashville. The Chiefs came out and put a dud up on the field. They lost 27-3, and that score is, I mean, utterly deceiving, because the Titans were up 27-0 at halftime. They just kind of ran the clock all second half. So the question that every single sports media person is asking right now is, what's wrong with the Chiefs? I mean, first of all, the easy answer is you point to their defense. Their defense, I think, is the historical worst defense in league history at this point. And I mean, I know that that's going to change. I think they have some injuries. They have some good players on defense. I think Frank Clark is coming back soon. Tyrann Mathieu is always a gamer. He's really instinctual. He's a ball hawk. So what's wrong with the Chiefs then? They normally have this high-powered offense. They got Kelce and Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, and they revamped the O-line. Just a number of really good players. Well, the Titans came down and scored on the first five straight drives to open the game. Five straight. It was pretty much over at that point. So then what my opinion on what is going on with the Chiefs is their defense is so bad that, I mean, if you look at the numbers, Patrick Mahomes is not playing well. He's having the worst stretch in his career, and that doesn't mean that he's not still the best quarterback in the league, because he probably still is, especially talent-wise. The guy can throw backwards, and it still gets completions. But what's going on with them? An interesting point, I forget who I heard it from, is that the Chiefs are, like, pressing. Their offense is pressing. They fall into huge deficits. They were down, I mean, of course, 27-0 this game. And then Mahomes isn't panicking, but he's trying to press the ball into more tighter windows that aren't there, because he knows that he has to compensate for the terrible defense. He's going to have to score and win in one way, which is put up 50 points to compensate for the defense giving up 40, for example. And it's just leading him to trouble. I mean, he's tied with my guy, Zach Wilson, for the most picks in the league. I think he had two turnovers yesterday. And I mean, they like started putting drives together in the second half. You know that offense is there. They had a 64-yard drive, and then they went for it on fourth down because, once again, they're pressing, and they didn't get it, and Mahomes got blown up and actually appeared to be hurt after that. So we'll see how much he's pressing after this. They had a 91-yard drive that ended with a fumble. I believe that was like so late in the game that it was inconsequential, but regardless, their offense is still there. It's just this sort of pressure that they feel by virtue of being down multiple scores every game, or even if they're not down, they know that their defense is not going to put them in a position where they can score 25 and come away with the win. So we saw it last week against Washington. Their offense still has all the pieces. They were, 13-10 at the end of the third quarter, and then they ended up winning 31-10 against Washington, who has an awesome defensive front, but they're not playing well, so we'll get into that after. Actually, right now, because the Packers, Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, played Washington this weekend up in Lambeau, where the Packers wore some of the coolest uniforms I've seen in a long time. The throwback green with the all-yellow helmets, gray face masks, they just look good. It kind of just went like a typical Packers game. Aaron Rodgers throws for a couple touchdowns, and then they kind of slow everything down. The defense gets into a rhythm. The other team can't get anything going, and the Packers win by the score of roughly 24-27 to whatever, 10. It seems like every game against the Vikings takes place this way, or against the Bears. They are a really good regular season team, the Packers, but let's see if they can do it in the playoffs. They've been disappointing, losing those back-to-back NFC Championship games. But man, do I wish that Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers could do Zach Wilson and Mike LaFleur could do what Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur are doing, because I'm extremely envious of that offense. They just fly around the field. They seem to like, every game seems to be at a whim, where if like they want to go down and score and they need extra points, they have the ability to do it. But why expend even more energy? On to the other side, Washington. It's a bummer to see what happened to Washington this year. I mean, the season's not over, but man, it's just so surprising the way that their defense has just not shown up to the table. They've had that amazing front seven last year. I think that their whole entire defensive line was four first-round picks. Like Chase Young was the second overall pick in 2020, I believe. He was a monster. And now they just can't stop a nosebleed. And not to mention, their offense is so limited, with exception to Terry McLaurin. He's amazing. But their offense is so limited just by virtue of the quarterback. It's almost the same idea as the Broncos. Like, why didn't Washington go out and address a quarterback this offseason? Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick is awesome. He's the best to watch all the highlights. He's funny. Fitzmagic. I mean, I was Jets fan when he put together a magical season. And, of course, in Fitzpatrick fashion, ended it in miserable fashion. So, I mean, Washington. Heinicke is fun, but he's not good. So we'll see where they go from there. I think it would be super smart if they did address a quarterback this upcoming draft or free agency. I mean, I don't know what free agent quarterbacks. I got to take a look. Anyways, they're not going to win any games with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback. They have such a cap on whether they can be good or not, even if their defense comes back to normal. Next game was mostly a throwaway game. The Giants defeated the Panthers 25-3 in MetLife. Panthers are on a cataclysmic collapse from a 3-0, really dynamic, fun team, to a 3-4, horrible offense. Defense is solid, but it can't lead them to wins. I mean, starting out the same way that the Broncos did with 3 wins, these fan bases were just so excited, and then 4 losses. I mean, we already touched upon it before. Sam Darnold, he used to be my guy in New York. He's just having a tough time. I don't think he's good. I think at this point we have to come to the realization that he just isn't a good quarterback. 16 for 25 for 111 yards and a pick. He got benched for PJ Walker in the second half. He was really bad. It's sad to see. And the Giants' defense isn't anything extraordinary whatsoever, and they have weapons. DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson on the outside. I know their offensive line is bad. I hope that they stick with him for one more year, maybe, and get him an offensive line. That's what I would do if I was the GM of the Panthers. But I don't think that they're going to do it. I think that Sam Darnold's playing for his job right now and not playing well enough to keep it. So it's a bummer to see. I mean, especially being a Jets fan, like, he always said the right thing. He said everything correctly. He was a great dude. He has no animosity towards the Jets, even though they kind of totally put him in terrible positions to succeed. So I want to see Sam Darnold to succeed. I think it's time that we just give up and say he is not good enough. You can fight back on me if you want, but I don't think that Sam Darnold is good enough to win you any games. Next game, we can start to fly through these ones that are more boring. The Falcons defeated the Dolphins 30-28. This was actually a great game. Just very little implications. I mean, I guess the Falcons are now 500 at 3-3. Kyle Pitts has had an awesome day. National tight end say he showed up. I believe he hasn't had a drop since his week 10 of the 2019 season in Florida. So what is that, like, almost 2 years now? He had 10 catches, 168 yards, I believe. Tua might be playing for his job right now. There's all these rumors flying around with Miami and Deshaun Watson. So there's a good chance that Tua is playing for his job right now. And he had a great game. I think he had 4 touchdowns and 2 picks. He looked pretty dynamic, which he hasn't in much of his career there. And it's good to just see him, that he's like, regardless of whether they're winning or not, Tua's going to get his chance to play for his job. He's not injured. They're not going to throw in Fitzpatrick just to, like, mess up his rhythm. So right now, Tua has a totally fair shot to defend his job over Deshaun Watson. I hope, since I'm a Jets fan, and I hate the Dolphins, of course, I hope that they don't go after Deshaun Watson, because that would be miserable to have in division. But if you're the Dolphins, I would. I mean, I'm not going to get into any of the legal stuff or any of this moral stuff. I'm saying, just as a quarterback talent, I would go for Deshaun Watson because he's far more talented than Tua. But we'll see how that goes. I hope that they don't. That would not be good for in division. The next game is the Eagles versus the Raiders, in which the Raiders won 33-22. The Eagles got Lane Johnson back and bumped their guard back to their left tackle, so all the betting sharks were going heavily after the Eagles, thinking that their offensive line was going to just neutralize the not very strong Raiders pass rush. And that was not the case at all. The Raiders, who are amid this whole John Gruden thing, which is really impressive how that they've been playing and responding to this whole John Gruden controversy, they came out and they were came out firing. Derek Carr is playing MVP-style football. He's really killing it. He was 323 yards, two touchdowns, a pick, 31 for 34. He had a 92% completion percentage or whatever. I mean, they're in an interim head coach, and they have put together two impressive back-to-back wins just weeks after this whole scandal with John Gruden comes out, and they lose their head coach, and the locker room can be totally divided, and it's amazing to see how they responded. The Eagles, Jalen Hurts, limited. Nick Sirianni, still waiting for a verdict, but that was not an impressive performance. But kudos to the Raiders, who now are tied for the top of the AFC with the Bengals and the Titans. Yeah, go Vegas. Really fun game and a really fun storyline took place in the later window. The Rams playing the Lions, in which the Rams beat the Lions 28-19. The reason why this was such a fun game, considering they are two very disparate records between these two teams, is the Matt Stafford-Jared Goff trade. It was fun to see the two of them back out on the field. Matt Stafford playing the team he spent a decade with in Detroit. And Jared Goff playing against the team that traded him and undervalued him, clearly, because the Lions also got two first-round picks in addition to him for Matt Stafford. So it was like a revenge game for Jared Goff. He had the chance to prove to the Rams fans that they made a mistake. And at the beginning, it was really fun. Dan Campbell, the rookie head coach for the Lions, came out and called one of the most aggressive games possible. He had an onside kick right after they scored an opening drive touchdown, which they recovered, which is so rare today, caught everybody off guard, and within the same drive on fourth down in their own territory, faked a punt. So I was so happy. I didn't get to watch much of this game. I mean, I'm also a college student, so I have a lot of other homework to do. But man, watching these highlights, all my buddies were texting me like, Alliance coach is crazy. It was totally awesome. It's fun to see Dan Campbell, I feel like, understands the whole situation for Jared Goff. He was trying to give him every single little tiny single advantage for Jared Goff to go and show up his old team and show him what's wrong. And the Lions didn't go away, really, until the end. Stafford played really well, I know. I think that he must have had a bunch of just as much emotions as Goff did. I mean, it wasn't as much of a revenge game as he asked for a trade, but still, it was a fun game to watch. Let's run through some of these more boring games. Cardinals defeated the Texans 31-5. That was to be expected. Texans aren't very good. Davis Mills is not good. Excuse me. Yeah, Kyler's putting together an MVP campaign. They're 7-0. We'll talk more about the Cardinals in a little bit because they have a huge game coming up. The next one is the Bears getting pummeled by the Buccaneers 38-3. Justin Fields had three picks and three fumbles, two of which were not recovered by the Bears. So it was a rough day for him, but I feel like every rookie kind of has that day. Zach Wilson had that against the Patriots. Trevor Lawrence, I think, had that in week one. Tom Brady had an awesome day. Awesome day. Four or five touchdowns. He's making an MVP campaign for himself. He threw a 600th touchdown pass, and which Mike Evans gave it away to a fan. And so this is something I wanted to talk about. I was lucky enough, as a high school student, I went to a Yankee game with my buddies. I live outside of New York, and caught Brett Gardner's 100th home run ball. Brett Gardner is a longtime Yankee vet. He's one of the only tenured Yankees that was on that 2009 World Series team. I caught his 100th home run ball. I was sitting out in the right field bleachers. It barely got over the short porch and right at Yankee Stadium. Trickled around. I got it on my legs. So this fan that got the ball after Mike Evans caught the 600th touchdown, he gave it away for, I believe, $1,000 at the Bucks team store, and like some tickets, and Brady offered him like a surprise. And he's getting ridiculed online, ridiculed for this decision. They said, you know how much this ball would be worth, blah, 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 blah. I think that that's a lazy argument. If you're really a fan, why would you want to withhold the ball that's meaningful to Tom Brady from him? So when I caught that ball, I never even really thought twice about keeping it. I mean, he hit it. It was his 100th home run. All the people in the stands were like, get money, get tickets. And so I was with my friends there, and when the security officer came up to me, he's like, hey, we want that ball back. I said, all right. They said we're willing to negotiate. So this was just even news to me that this type of stuff happens. I was like, can I just meet him and give the ball to him in person? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, the difference in sentiment, because online for that move, all over Twitter and all over Instagram, I was praised for giving the ball back and being like a quote unquote good fan. My parents were extremely happy with me, and they said that that was a good thing to not exploit the team. And Brett Garner was like the nicest guy. I met him, got a tour of the locker room, got a tour of the clubhouse, went into the dugout, went out at the field, and I did it with all my buddies. And of course I had to do it with my buddies because they were the ones who invited me to the game. So that was the best reward of them all. I could have been so selfish and taken like season tickets for myself, but then my friends who brought me there wouldn't have gotten any of the rewards. So it was super fair. I felt so happy. It was like one of the best experiences of my life. So I'm just so in shock that they're ridiculing this guy. Who cares what he gets in return? Tom Brady gets his ball back, and that's all that matters. That's just my take on it. Whatever. That doesn't really have to do with sports, but it was an interesting storyline. I believe that Barry Bonds' last home run ball, the one that broke the record was sold for like $500,000. That I didn't know before I was at the game, and I don't think it would have changed my decision. First of all, Brett Gardner's 100th home run would not have been nearly as valuable as Barry Bonds' record-breaking one. But regardless, I think that it's something that's more important to the player than it is to you. So you can be selfish, or you can understand and be sympathetic that this has more intrinsic value because they work hard and they are so good at their craft that they have gotten this great athletic achievement. So give the ball back. I'm done with the people ridiculing him. The Sunday night game was Colts-Niners. Colts won 30-18. Garoppolo was back. They weren't that good. It was played in a monsoon. It was like mostly pretty sloppy football. But Carson Wentz is stepping up and playing totally well for the Colts. Not expected whatsoever. Puts together a huge game for Colts versus Titans next week. For the Colts, this is a must win. I mean, I'm sure that if they were to drop it and go to 3-5, they could most definitely, especially with 7 playoff teams now in each division, they could easily get a wild card spot. But if they want any shot at winning that division, they have to beat Tennessee this upcoming week because they already lost to them once. So to get any sort of tie-breaking help, they need to win this game. Tennessee will run away handedly with the division if they don't win this upcoming week. So that's a great game. I'm excited for that one. Tonight, the last game of the week is the Saints-Seahawks game tonight on Monday night. As the Jets are holding the Seahawks 2022 first-round pick, I am rooting so hard for Jameis Winston to throw 16 touchdowns tonight and bury the Seahawks. At 2-4, the Seahawks are now 2-4, which means the Jets have 2 top 10 picks. I hope that it stays that way. I know that when Russell Wilson comes back, it will be harder for it to stay that way because that guy's just a winner. But right now, Geno Smith, ironically, is totally in the power of how the Jets draft stock looks for this upcoming year. One thing to speak on about Joe Douglas, that Jamal Adams trade was one of the best GM decisions I've seen in a long time. The haul that they got for that player, who is mediocre, has highlight flashes, he's very spotty off and on, in the fact that they got two first rounders, a third rounder, and a player for him, and they don't have to pay him $18.5 million, which I believe is what the Seahawks are paying him every year, that's a huge win for Joe Douglas. That alone could get him another contract. Yeah, so tonight, I am a huge Saints fan. I don't know what the line is, but I can imagine it's pretty even. Saints are definitely favored, though. I think they're at home, and they're facing a backup quarterback, so they should be favored. So the one game that's way more important that I want to talk about before I think I got to head off the air soon. There was some technical difficulties at the beginning of the show. I was a couple minutes late to getting my airtime. But the game next week that is going to be so much fun, and it's going to be such a different experience considering most Thursday night games are so miserable, they're terrible, is that the Green Bay Packers traveled to Arizona to play the Cardinals, who were 7-0 for Thursday night football. So short week. This will take place in a couple days. I believe that Arizona is 4.5-point favorites, which I am so surprised about. Sometimes I just get appalled that people continue to doubt Aaron Rodgers in the regular season. He's one of the best regular season players like ever. It seems like it's a more like veteran team around in Green Bay. Versus like a new young kind of core, really taking stride in Arizona. So what I think it really tells us about Arizona is if they're for real. I mean, 7-0, they haven't played many great teams. So this game against the Packers, for both teams, honestly, the Packers haven't played many great teams either. Whoever wins this game is going to prove a lot to the football community. I can't wait for it. I normally study from the hours of like 5 to 11 in the library with no phone, and I think that on Thursday I actually will take that night off, watch the whole game. I'm really envious of most sports talk people because they can spend their whole Sundays prioritizing watching every game. For me, I got loads of other work to do, so I got to make room for both. I like to watch most games on Sunday, but it's obviously just that's not feasible. So this was my first show. I want to next week get more into college football. I love college football. I mean, I'm a UConn college football fan, so it's like you guys can just laugh at me. But regardless, there were some good games this weekend. I mean, that Illinois-Penn State game went into 9 overtimes. I watched every overtime of that. That 2-point conversion rule is a lot of fun. I think that they should have developed that into the NFL. Crazy fun. Nobody could score. Illinois comes away with the win, which I'm upset with. I like Penn State. I don't know why. I like to root for James Franklin. He seems like he's a lot of energy and a coach I would like to play for. The game next week that's going to be so huge is two undefeateds in Michigan and Michigan State rivals going in both at 7-0, playing in East Lansing, I believe at noon. Oh, excuse me. And I forget what the spread is, but that's going to be a great game. So next week we'll get it more into college football, maybe into some NBA as well. I'll have less time talking about my biases as a sports fan and more time to talk about other topics other than just NFL weekend. But overall, thank you for having me. This has been WJRH 104.9 FM Lafayette College Radio in Easton, Pennsylvania. This has been Hot Take Sports by Will Clemens, and I can't wait to see you guys next week. This has been a ton of fun. Thank you.